some of your comments here. Let us all remember the behaviour of certain politicians when the elections come around and ignore those who ignore the people at their time of greatest need. Another, until there's a change of government, nothing will change. Greg, heartbreaking listening to the Morgan family talking about the Mica experience. As an affected homeowner who has lived with this nightmare for 10 years, I've decided to not continue to fight for the scheme and just to try to live life and walk away from it. My house is not bad, in inverted commas. So after being in limbo for too long for my mental health, I just have to forget about Mica and carry on. Can you imagine? They're just effectively saying, this is the state of the house and this is what I'm going to live in. And I really get that, actually. I can imagine it, because for 10 years it's been ever present in your life. But it's a sorry state of affairs that you should have to feel like that. It really is. A caller says, once it's been confirmed your house has Mica, what way does that affect your home insurance? Will you still get cover? I think you get certain types of cover. I don't know the ins and outs, and it's going to vary from company to company, but someone out there might be able to let us know. But I think you might be able to get certain types of cover and not others. But as I say, there's people out there will know, and I'm sure will let us know. The silence from our local councillors and TDs is deafening. I'd love for them to prove me wrong by coming on air to explain what they're doing day in and day out to help the people. Well, they will say the councillors are meeting in an emergency session today to discuss the issue. But the caller goes on to say they probably won't, as politics seems to be more about strategically dodging issues while trying to keep your seat instead of helping the public you represent. Also, the red tape around the scheme's disgraceful, and local council support seems to be lukewarm at best. History will not judge our reps kindly as people's homes crumble around them through no fault of their own. Shame on our elected reps. Thank you, Highland, for continuing to highlight this serious issue. And I mean, people might say, well, a councillor could do this or that or vote a certain way on a certain issue, like votes of no confidence and what have you. But a lot of councillors are working very hard on this issue and working with people on the ground all the time. And I'm saying that in the interests of absolute fairness. But then, of course, then there's the executive, which is having to administer what the council is having to administer in this new scheme. They're facing their own challenges in terms of staffing, having to go through each individual application in the old scheme to move them to the new scheme. They said in a press release that, of course, is going to take time. So, as I say, I'm not here to defend any individual or any organisation, but in the interest of fairness, like I know personally, there are a lot of councillors that are heavily invested in this issue and do help people, but there is only a certain amount in terms of actually progressing it that they can do. I'm sure they would say if they were on the radio themselves, and they don't shy away from the issue if we invite them on. In fairness, I couldn't point to any individual that has. They are willing to discuss the issue. Where is Minister Charlie McConnell Ogue? Hope the people of this country or this county remember how he had failed the people of Donegal along with all the other government representatives. Again, just to be fair, on the Mica issue, there are those in the farming industry, the fishing, coastal communities that may believe that he's delivering for them. Hi, Greg. The quicker the Irish people wake up to this government and get them out of power, the better. They're bringing in new laws every month. It's coming to a stage in Ireland. They are going to be, there's going to be no living. It's no wonder so many young people are getting out of it. Sitting on the Mallon Road, Maville, waiting on the lights to change, just observe two lorry drivers, one young girl on their phone driving up the main street. We need to mark, no marked garter cars on the road 24 hours and treble the fines, that caller believes. Driving up and down to Mayo every weekend, at least 14 years now, and haven't seen a checkpoint once apart from the COVID checkpoints. Yeah, a lot of people report similar there. On the issue of speeding, saw a speed van recently on the Lifford Road, Stranorlar, near St. Joseph's, a Sunday, I think. It was practically hidden, but in an area to capture revenue, in my opinion. A caller says it's not the people who are adhering to the current speed limits that are causing the problems. It's those who don't. If there's no enforcement, it doesn't matter what the limits are. It'll only affect the current compliant. Just look at all the illegally modified cars, yellow back number plates, lowered suspension, darkened windscreen, etc. Blatantly, obviously illegal. No enforcement. They'll do anything but spend on resources. Did they not just double the fines for speeding? Another, the road tragedies have been awful, but long journeys, example, Glenties to Dunlow at 60, will be much too slow. I think it will make people take more risks, especially when it comes to overtaking. It's a difficult one, and as I say, it is complex, because on the face of it, if you read the papers, you would believe that every speed limit is going to go downwards, but it is the base point is going down, and then there can be variants. How much the councils might vary from that guidance from the government, we don't know. How stupid of our government? Can they not see the big mistake they're making by reducing the speed and also the signs that will have to be changed? Well, listen, I accept that obviously we have to do something to address the crisis on the roads. And this is not an argument against lowering the speed limits. But think, close your eyes and think, what was one of the big key points that Eamon Ryan says we need to do to reduce fuel consumption, to make our cars more economical, to stop burning more fuel? Last year, the year before, huge advocate of reducing speed limits. And it wasn't for safety at that time, if my memory serves me correctly. It was about the environment. So some out there might feel, and I'm not saying it's the case, and I'm not arguing against the dropping of speed limits, but some might say you don't waste a crisis and you use one issue. Sometimes it can benefit you in another area, i.e. Meeting climate targets. Because if cars generally slow down, the emissions will go down as well. A caller says, the new speed limits are a joke. What's the point in it? People who are already speeding will speed. You can drive from here to Cork and you won't meet a guard. Hi, Greg. Is this not the time to consider a new minor injuries unit for Carr and Donagh when we have X-ray facilities now planned 5 days per week? People have shown deserve closer facilities to get treatment rather than travelling to Letterkenny and sitting for hours in a heavily congested ED. Guards need to intervene at situations at Larky Breck School where people are doing U-turns exiting the school pickup area to go towards the town again. It's extremely dangerous, as in, and is an annihilation waiting to happen. Yeah, I think we'd all fear that. I know exactly where and what you're talking of. And on it goes. Thank you so much for keeping us so busy on our phone and text lines. 086 60 25000. 086 60 25000 is what up. There is a slight issue with one of the numbers on our graphics. I will get that changed. Okay, we start. We read out and talked about some figures from yesterday, but I think so significant that I just didn't want to park it at that, because we learned that one quarter of primary age children and 40% of secondary age pupils in Ireland have experienced cyberbullying. The latest report from CyberSafe Kids shows girls are more likely than boys to be victimised online, with the posting of pictures without permission, creation of fake social media profiles and exclusion from chat groups, the most commonly experienced forms of online abuse. A quarter of primary age children, as I said, and 40% of secondary age pupils in Ireland have experienced that cyberbullying. Philip Arneil is Head of Education and Innovation and joins us now. Good morning. Thank you so very much indeed. I mean, these figures really paint a really sad and pressured picture for our young people, Philip.
They do, absolutely. And I think probably what is sad is that these are not new figures. These are figures that we've been reporting on for 5 or 6 years now, and they don't change dramatically, to be perfectly honest. So I think really the time has come to not only acknowledge them, but to really tackle these problems. You know, to think that almost a quarter exactly of 8 to 12 year olds have already experienced cyberbullying is shocking. And it's just important to clarify that that's not just cyberbullying. It's actually potentially more than one type of cyberbullying. So when we survey these children anonymously, we give them a list of possible behaviours that they might have experienced. So they could, in actual fact, tick multiple types of cyberbullying.
And we're pretty much at maximum smart device ownership now? 93% of 8 to 12-year-olds have access to a smart device. 31% say they're allowed to go online whenever they like and play, presumably, with whoever they like, interact with whomever they like. These are 8 to 12-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, really, at that age group, there really shouldn't be any time they're going online unsupervised or unmonitored. And I think also it's worth drawing attention to the fact that that age group in particular 84% of them have their own social media account, 37% with a TikTok account, 37% with a Snapchat account. Now, obviously, if you're familiar with social media platforms, you'll know that the minimum age restriction is 13. So already they're 84% of that cohort online and on social media platforms, which are, of course, not designed for children, you know, well before they should be on there. So and with that 31% having unrestricted access, 15% of that number also report that they have no rules when they go online. So it's really, it's not a great picture, to be perfectly honest, because as we know, the online world and the internet in particular was not designed for children.
Yeah, and parents and guardians, caregivers could do themselves a favour and check their children's TikTok account and check how many times maybe their videos have been favourited or bookmarked, and then wonder, ask themselves perhaps, well, why has that happened? Because there is an awful lot of very nasty people in that space.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really important that parents are supervising and monitoring their children's online activity. But I think it's not just from the bottom up. You know, education is important. We're going into schools, we're going into workplaces, and we're educating kids and parents. But it's also important that this change is coming from the top down. It's important that there's sufficient regulation and legislation, particularly around social media platforms, because, you know, we're hearing often year in, year out, you know, these record profits are being reported. And yet we're also told that there are sufficient safeguards in place around age restrictions. But these statistics here that we reported yesterday would beg to differ. You know, whatever kids are doing, they're getting around these minimum age restrictions. And obviously, if kids are smart enough to figure out what year to put in to indicate that they're 18 years old, then they're immediately able to access whatever content they like on a lot of these platforms.
Do we not really need to hold a mirror up to ourselves, though, here and sort of say, and I don't know what the breakdown might be, but for me, it feels like, you know, it's 90% our responsibility and 10% of the social media companies' responsibilities. I mean, there's an awful lot more that they could do, but we're giving in. We're all giving in. 93% of us allow 8 to 12-year-olds to have access to a smart device of others or others. Now, I presume they're not all mobile phones and tablets. I presume the likes of a Switch is in there. Anything internet connected, am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah, a smart device we're defining as anything connected to the internet. So tablets, very popular. Games consoles are very popular. And then you see, predictably, you see that level of smartphone ownership increase. I mean, I understand what you're saying about, you know, parents and caregivers being responsible, but I don't think it's as simple as that. I think there's got to be legislation. You know, that the fact that that these social media companies exist and that they're putting out these platforms and kids are getting on them, that's not something that can be ignored. And it's really important that we are tackling it, I think, from both ends of that spectrum to ensure that kids, when they go online, whatever age that might be, that they're having a positive and beneficial experience and not something that's negative or indeed in some cases going to, you know, traumatize them and affect them later in life. And we see that already from these kind of cyberbullying statistics that we've reported. You know, none of this can be having a good effect on kids' mental health.
Now, I'm not saying it's not without dangers, but the likes of Sony and the PlayStation and the Xbox, they do have really quite intelligent systems to flag bullying or bad language or certain trigger words or phrases, you know, and you can get a sharp ban there really quite quickly. I don't think we're going to ever see that from your Snapchats and your TikToks. So the only solution then, the only solution is photo ID, that you only can register with photographic ID, because that's the only thing that's going to protect our children.
Well, yes, I mean, that may well be true. And there are obviously certain concerns around privacy and this has been floated in the UK, for example, around using pornographic websites. But I do think it's not a case of we just let the social media companies do what they want to do, or we bring in photographic ID recognition. I mean, there is sophisticated work going on around age verification. And so that may come. But in the meantime, reality right now is that kids are on here. So we've got to educate.
But the biggest porn site in the world's X, formerly Twitter. And you can peruse that without even signing in.
Anything you want to find is there.
So we're so far back. Maybe I'm a little frustrated and not certainly with you, Philip, but I've been having these conversations for a long time, long before a lot of the social media that's there you know, that when it wasn't there. So I just feel that how many children are being very severely harmed whilst us adults are sort of, you know, arguing the case of what we should do. We just need to do something. Not me and you again. Don't get me wrong. It's not. I'm not putting this on you, Philip. But do you sort of get where I'm coming from?
Absolutely. I mean, believe me, we share your frustration. You know, year in, year out, we're reporting these statistics, and yet we don't see sufficient actions being taken. For example, even the difficulties now of getting content, and we're regularly contacted by schools. We're regularly contacted by distraught parents who have found accounts online either criticizing or bullying their children, in some cases accounts created in that person's name and posting, and they just have no channels, they have no way to get this content down. Now obviously Ireland is making good steps. We've got the Online Safety Commissioner's Office. The online safety codes are being worked on at the minute, and we're really hopeful that this will also include eventually an individual complaints mechanism, which will then give users like yourself, like me, like all the parents that are frustrated out there with their children being on here and making mistakes, which children will do, to actually get a lot of this content taken down, and also then hold these companies to account. You know, there would be financial penalties that would kick in very quickly. They would have to legally remove this content much, much faster and much more efficiently than they currently do.
Yeah, but that's complicated as to where they're based, though, and where they have head offices, and then of course there's VPNs, I've no doubt there's 12, 13, 14 year olds know very easily how to stick a VPN on their phone as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Which is why I think also education is really an important part of this picture. So we don't see it. There's no silver bullet here. There's no magic fix. So a big part of our work is educating children, because the reality is we go into primary schools, we don't tell the kids off. We don't wag our finger at them. We say, look, we know from your survey that you're already online. So there is definitely a part to be played where we can actually teach kids, if they are on there, how at least they can minimize these risks, how they can mitigate against these risks. And similarly, part of that is educating parents. You know, this idea of supervising, monitoring your kids. And actually, more than anything, the important thing for parents is just to talk to their kids to find out what they're doing. Because what we get is a lot of feedback from parents where they say, well, look, I don't know what they're doing. You know, I'm completely overwhelmed. But there's very few parents would say to you, you know, I just send my kids out to the park. I don't really know where they are. Or, you know, they haven't come back all day, but I'm not really sure what they're up to. Or send them off to the cinema to see, you know, an 18 and over film, for example. So I think we've got to also tackle this idea that somehow being in the house and being online and having a device is somehow safer. It's really not.
But we have to talk about, though, Philip, what's driving young people online. It's to go viral. It's to be YouTube famous. It's to be TikTok famous. It's to get as many hearts or likes or reposts as you can possibly get. It's your view count on a certain video. And if they go into that space, you can't really hold them back for that. You say, well, why are you making that video? And they go, oh, well, I've got a private group of friends and I'm sending that. But they're probably not, because the hunger for that recognition is so strong, and it's been tailored in such a way that they'll probably tell you anything just to be able to do it. Do you know? So yeah. We have to try and battle that. And I don't see how we win that battle unless, and I really hate overregulation and overreach and Big Brother stuff, unless people have to prove with identity what age they are.
Yes, but the problem that you're describing there is not actually unique to children and young people. Adults are in exactly the same situation. We're all sucked into this algorithm. We all want the likes. We all want the comments. We all want the posts and the reshares. So I think there's a bigger societal picture. And one of the things that we really want to push is this idea of societal norms around what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. If you draw analogies with the physical world, things like seatbelts, for example, it's shocking now if you get into a car and someone's not wearing a seatbelt. But, you know, the internet is relatively young. It seems like it's been with us forever. But we've got to start kind of pushing these norms. We've got to push this balance. We've got to push this idea of digital health. Mm-hmm. And I think it will come. But it is unfortunate at the moment we're all in that situation. As well as just regulation, yeah. I think also what we can do is model that behavior. You know, if we're not doing it, and then we're telling children or we're telling pupils to do it, how effective is that messaging? So it's also on adults and as a society for us to model that behavior that we expect to see in children when it comes to their online behavior.
Yeah, but that's a little bit like trying to help your children with their homework when you have no clue that you didn't, you know, you left school early. Like the problem here is, yes, it's new. Google, I think, is actually 25 years old today. But, you know, parents, guardians, they don't understand the space of a full sense of what's going on to go in and help and police it. That's the issue. And I think the majority of people don't.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if I don't know how to drive a car, I still know that there are various dangers that come with driving a car. And I think, you know, parents can, and this is one of the things that we try to signpost in our parent sessions and our adult sessions, there's a wealth of great resources out there. Things like Peggy website, Common Sense Media, Common Sense Education. So you don't have to be a TikToker. You don't have to be a YouTuber, but you can go and watch an explainer video or read a couple of pages on a website that will tell you straight away and demystify what these apps are, what they're doing. And also the other way to do that, of course, is to talk to your kids. Get your kids to show you what they're doing. Get them to explain why it's popular, what's trending at school, what kind of games people are playing. And whether you're into it or not, I mean, I know this, we all know this. You know, I grew up listening to music that my parents hated. They didn't understand, you know, and so it's a similar thing. So I think it's about informing yourself to a level where at least you can have a conversation with your kids. And then, of course, if you have this open dialogue and you have these channels open with your children, then you're in a position when obstacles do arise, when problems do occur, that you can mitigate those and you can help them with that much easier. Because we know, obviously, by hiding these problems and trying to push them underground, the kids are only going to get themselves into a stickier situation in the long run.
So we've got our responsibilities, the social media companies do, and the state does as well. There obviously are trials and there's conversations and talk. Is it time now that, smart devices are banned from primary schools and even secondary schools up to 16 or something like those? Just get them out of that system.
Well, I mean, I think it's a complex picture. I was a teacher myself, so I've seen a lot of benefits of using phones and tablets and different kinds of educational technology within the classroom. And I think that's a really positive picture, actually. But I understand also this idea, and we've seen in Ireland now there are some voluntary bans and there's some movements within different counties and different schools to at least encourage parents and to encourage each other to hold back on smartphone use. And I think certainly that's got to be a good thing, because probably what separates the tablet and the games console in particular is the mobility of the smartphone. And obviously once kids have got a smartphone, it really does open up a whole different world in terms of the access to content that they have, because they're out of the house. They're connected constantly. And so we would say certainly in terms of the smartphone, whether or not you ban them or not, it's definitely a good idea to try and hold back as long as possible. We find that what seems to have become the norm now is this idea that maybe around communion, kids get their first phone. But, you know, as long as possible, it's worth holding off as parents and caregivers, because even with something like social media accounts, if your child's not yet 13, they shouldn't be on there anyway. So things like that are not even an argument to getting a smartphone from a child or young people. But they're under a lot of peer pressure too, and we understand that as well. You know, a lot of kids look around, they see people with other stuff, they see people doing other things, and so they're feeling that pressure as well to be part of that and not to be excluded.
Yeah, it's a tough area. Philip, thanks very much for your time. I do appreciate it. It's been very nice speaking to you, and it's an interesting survey and one we should all take note of, I think. Philip Arneil there, who is Head of Education and Innovation with Cyber Safe Kids. Any views on that? 08660 25000. A listener says, I have a 14-year-old daughter who has been bullied since last year. It started offline, leaving her out in the yard, name-calling, and now it started online. It's horrendous. She sits in the toilets at lunch. To see your daughter pick up the phone, tears forming, and to be physically sick reading comments about her, the school will not get involved and haven't once contacted parents and children. I've now taken it to the Gardaí, who are also shocked at the behaviour of the school. It's her mental health I worry about. We say things like, things will make you stronger, but I'm no longer seeing my daughter I once knew because these girls are breaking her and breaking mum too, or dad too, by the sounds of it. Very, very difficult for you. Try not telling children that their very existence pollutes the planet. They might improve that might improve their mental health. It's more our existence that's destroying their planet. But anyway, I take your point. Thank you for that. Okay, we're joined on the programme now by Anna O'Donnell, owner of Adventure One Surf School. Heartbreaking for you this morning, Anna. Your storage locker burnt down, and of course it contained all the equipment. What happened?
Yeah, it's just still hard to believe, but it's very sad. Early Sunday morning, 5 o'clock, I got a call from Sabrina, my son's girlfriend, saying that there's a fire. And it took her about half an hour to wake me up, actually, because I'm in Michigan. But anyway, the whole thing's gone, literally just a lot, everything. And it's all our gear that we've replaced and worked towards getting, you know, for the last 5 years. And it's just everything, you know, gone. So we were in Chrysler. We had the storage unit in Glasson, just very close to the Glasson National School in Chrysler. So we're hoping that we know that there's CCTV cameras there, and we're hoping to just even appeal to anyone, to, you know, that in the area that has cameras or anything that might be able to help. Because I think the part for me is it's just who and why, because you know, to start again, the cost is so much.
That's terrible for you. This is not a fire that could have started accidentally in this unit. There was no trigger points, you know, no electricity as such.
No electricity at all. We didn't have that set up at all. And we'd only had the unit there since, you know, February, March this year.
Yeah.
And we didn't have any electricity. It was all dry, you know, all gear, you know, wetsuits, like, you know, over 120 wetsuits, all our paddle boards, everything. You know, it's not the kind of thing that goes on fire, really. We've tried to think of every possible cause. So what I'd really like to find out is the actual cause. And just so to start up again next week, booking the next week, and I'm kind of going, what, we have to cancel, or can I just go buy the stuff and start again, you know?
Yeah, and this is something that you've built up, but it's a very personal project, I'd imagine, for you, Anna, and this is an awful lot of effort and time and commitment and love that went up in flames.
Yeah, definitely 5 years of work.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Anna. You want to know now what's going on here. Did someone do this to you? Was there some freak event, whatever that might be, that caused this? But I'm sure the Gardaí are fully investigating the situation, Anna.
Yeah, definitely. We're talking to them every day. And just they've said to anyone who knows anything at all, just to contact them in Milford, a Gardaí station, and with the number that if we need to call that out. So they're investigating it with the friendlies on the side, and hopefully something comes up the CCTV cameras. Because the most important part for me now is who and why. Like, why would they do that, you know?
And I've spoken to people in this situation before, and then you're also wondering, would someone do this to me and do it to me on purpose? And there's a horrible range of emotions running through you, I'm sure, as you're just trying to deal with two, figuring out where to go to next. So can we just timeline it again, Anna? When did this happen? Where did it happen? Sort of, and as much information as you can give in case anyone has any information.
Yeah, so our storage unit was in Glasson, so that's GLASAN in Chrysler. It's just very close, about 50 metres from Glasson National School. So it's really up the back of our road. And you'd only need to know the area, and those in the area would know where that is, but that most people wouldn't, you know. It was Sunday morning, between 4 and 5, whether it started at that time, but that's when we were alerted to it happening. And then we got actually the fire brigade came, and we have saved a few boards that were sitting outside, but they would have gone too. And actually, what's scary part is what could have happened. You know, there was a house right behind it, you know, that could have spread very fast.
Sure.
But frankly,
violent fire too, with the rubber and the different makeup of the material that's in there. And God knows you could have had scuba diving equipment in there or something too. You know, you never know with these things. I know you didn't, but it could have been so much, much worse. So you're going to, do you know what you're going to do next, Anna, in terms of sort of getting new gear, and are you in limbo in that situation yet because it's so recent?
Well, the first thing I was doing Sunday, I was just going, I need gear. I just want to replace everything and pretend nothing happened, you know. So I've got my order. I've got a bit sheet. I'm just going to figure out what I need just to keep going. And I was talking to this supplier who we get our gear from. So, yeah, I'm working on that. And I'm actually working on where we can put it next and just looking at Fannid, because that's where we would operate out, mostly Fannid and Rathmullen. But it was just that it was convenient for where it was. But I wouldn't have any faith in the storage unit again. So I'm looking for, we're just working, trying to figure out what's best to do next.
And also, too, as part of that, you could have this nagging thing in the back of your head. Could this happen again until such time as you find out exactly what happened or who might be responsible too? It's going to be difficult for you to rest going forward, I'd imagine.
Yeah, that's the key. Every time I think, I'm just going to order stuff and get this, pretend nothing happened, just get on with it. And then you go, I feel like I've knives in my stomach going, who's done this to us? Why would they do that? And like, that's the part that gets me most as why? Okay. Like, why?
So, listen, if anyone's out there and want to support Adventure One Surf School with a booking or something down the line, go onto their Facebook page and check out Adventure One Surf School, and you get all the information there. And hopefully into the future you can support Anna and the crew going out for a day or something along those lines. And I hope you get a resolution to this quickly. I hope anyone who has any information gets it to the Gardaí as soon as is possible in Milford or any Garda station for that matter. And I'm so sorry for everything you've been through, and I hope brighter days are ahead. It's very raw for you at the moment, and I just hope things improve for you as quickly as is possible.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks for having us on. I think even chatting about it helps, you know.
Good, no problem. Okay, good stuff, Anna. Stay strong. It'll be okay. I've spoken to people before that had massive multi-million euro businesses destroyed, and they bounce back, and you don't think you will, but you do. So take some comfort in that. I hope you do.
Yeah, I don't want it to break us. There's no way. I'm not giving up on the last 5 years.
Exactly. It's tough, but you'll be good. I can tell by you. Yeah. You'll make sure everything will be okay. Thanks, Anna. Hopefully people will help. Thank you. Any information that can resolve that situation, it's horrible. And especially wondering, did someone do it? Was it personal? That's just a human thing. We'd all be inclined to think like that, I think. My daughter ended up having to move schools due to cyberbullying. There was a group chat made about her in primary school level. She's now in secondary school and is begging to have a bit more free rein on social media. I also don't want to outcast her from her peers. It's a hard balance to strike. Yes, it is. But, like, I don't think there's anyone... We're very defensive of our young people, of course, and we often think butter wouldn't melt in our mouth. But I don't think there's any of us would, A, want our child to be the victim of this, but B, want our child to be responsible for another child feeling like this. I just wish there was some system or mechanism or way where parents could sort of be put together, non-confrontational, where everyone could learn. Because I think a lot of people would go, wow, okay, I didn't think Leah Aaron was capable of that. You know what I mean? So I don't know how we can do it, because I don't think there's... Or maybe I'm just... Maybe sometimes I'm a little bit... naive in my optimism, but there has to be a way, doesn't it? Because none of us want children to be going through that, or none of us want our children to be responsible for putting other children through that, for that matter. Okay, let's dig into this announcement from the government that a whole range of speed limits are going to be dropped. Blake Boland is head of communications with the AA. Good morning, Blake. Thank you so much for joining us. It's a tough one, isn't it? Because we are also acutely aware and affected by the awful tragedy on our roads. People feel difficult, I think, putting a counter argument to these types of proposals.
That's right, yeah. We've seen 127 deaths on the road this year already. 25 of those were in August. And even beyond the statistics of road deaths, we have about 812 people were very seriously injured on the roads last year as well. So it's not just the deaths, it's also the roads. And these are, you know, these are wives and husbands and mothers and fathers and children. And there's such tragedy there. And when we're faced with the stark reality of what's happened on the roads this year already, it becomes very, very difficult to justify arguing against any measures that are going to help to make our roads a little bit safer.
But will it? Because in the absence of enforcement, and we do get spates of enforcement, people don't see the guards. They know where the GoSafe vans are. This is just going to inconvenience the 99.5% of people that seemingly, according to these national slowdown days, adhere to the speed limits.
Only on Monday we had a national day, you know, of awareness and enforcement. And still on Monday, just gone, 865 drivers caught speeding during that campaign. The August bank holiday saw something like 1,600 people caught speeding as well. So people are going to continue to do that. And unless we have the necessary enforcement, it's not going to happen. So, you know, you also raised another point. Is it going to inconvenience some people? Is it going to make a few journeys a little bit slower? Yes, it probably will. But again, in the context of what's happened, is it okay that I get to my destination in 47 minutes instead of 44 minutes or something like that? Mm-hmm. And do you know what? I think we all have to just kind of bear that in mind. And, you know, I travelled from Drogheda down to Dublin today, you know, 50 kilometres. And at no point was I able to get even close to the speed limits anyway, because there was a little bit of traffic there. So I think the reality of how much this will slow people down has the potential to be exaggerated. Will some people find it frustrating? Yes. But let's remember why it's been done.
Yeah, it's a little bit complicated, isn't it? Because the government will change, say, for instance, the 100-kilometre routes to 80, the 80 to 60. That's, listen, you know yourself here in Donegal, we've got silly, tiny little roads with grass up the middle of them. They shouldn't have 80 on them anyway. But just in relation to the other routes, so 100 down to 80, but then that can be varied up or down by a local authority. But the language coming from government seems to be that they will want the local authorities to follow their guidance that's going to be legislated.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, motorways and national primary roads will be unchanged. We're going to see some of the secondary roads that you're speaking about, you know, 100 down to 80, some local and rural roads from 80 down to 60, and then some towns and, you know, housing estates and things like that, cities going down to 30 kilometres an hour. So in general, we're looking at a 20 drop, all right. But it's still at the very early stages. I mean, the legislation, you know, the suggestion of it is going this month, I believe. But, you know, in reality, we're looking at early 2024 before anything, you know, in terms of legislation and detailed guidance gets put into effect. So in reality, we're looking at, what, second half of 2024 before any changes are there. But this is a gigantic project. You know, it's very easy to say the speed limits have dropped, but we're talking about tens of thousands of kilometres of roads that need changes in speed signs. We also need a massive education programme to follow this up, because a lot of people are going to be confused. A lot of people won't realise that the speed limit on a road has. So this is going to take a gigantic effort across all parts of society, from the government right down to you and I as we're driving home from work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just a quick one, because I have another guest on the speed limits, but I want to let you go, Blake. Are we heading towards €2 a litre of petrol and diesel? Obviously the government is restoring its in a staggered fashion VAT and excise and tax and whatever you might call it. What's the markets doing at the moment? Because we do see some of the big suppliers talking of turning the taps down.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There is the potential for €2 coming up now. We're only in between the second and the third tranche of those restorations, October 31st, 8 cents on petrol and another 6 cents on diesel. And if all else kind of stays the same, we're looking at prices in and around that 190. But as we said, that's if the market stays the same. And Saudi Arabia have been talking about continuing on that reduction of 1 million barrels a day. Production, Russia are also whispering that they might reduce production as well. And the markets will factor this in. And unfortunately, we're going to see prices at the pumps going up a little bit more over the next few months, but it's really just how far they go is the big question.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to know what the figure the government have in their head, because I know they have a figure where they start looking at stuff. I think it's €2 a litre, I don't know, but we'll see. Blake, thanks for your time. Blake Boland, Head of Communications with the AA, former Garda Sergeant Christy Galligan. I mean, some people feel this is quite reactionary on behalf of the government. Other people feel it fits the green agenda. And then we hear from Blake that, look, this is about saving lives and that's what's important. Do you think it will have that effect?
Yeah, well, I agree with what your previous speaker said in totality. But I've looked at a number of researches carried out there, both by the International Transport Forum for the OECD, and it looked at 10 different countries in the European countries. And it examined road safety performance in those countries, and it indicated a strong relationship between the speed and the number of crashes, where speed has a direct influence on the occurrence of road crashes. and it recommended reducing speeds and roads as well as the speed for different vehicles. And there was a number of other things like enforcement, road upgrades, road infrastructure, all of that as part of speed reductions to reduce road fatalities and injuries. Now, while we talk about the speed reductions, then the government bringing in legislation to introduce speed reductions, I think we need to look at the overall structure of a road infrastructure and everything else. And there was a time when we were talking about speed limiters on cars. I don't think we'll go that far, but there is another option that could be looked at. But there was another research carried out by a journal of epidemiology and community health in Northern Ireland there, where they reduced the speed limits in Belfast City in around 70 places or 70 streets in Belfast from the 30 to 40, down to 20. And they looked at that study over a period of 3 years. And the study showed that there was little impact on the long-term outcomes, including road traffic collisions or casualties and speed, except for the reduction of traffic volumes. So people were avoiding the 20 mile an hour speed limit areas to go back to the streets where there are 30 to 40, especially in rush hour traffic.
So it has to be thought in the whole too, because the listener said earlier, and we only have a couple of minutes, Christy, I wish we had more, but what about the lowered vehicles? What about the tinted windows? What about the enforcement of mobile phone use? What about the enforcement of speed? That we're going to recalibrate 100,000 kilometres of road, and yet we're not really even getting the simple things right now. And listen, all we all want is no tragedy to be visited on any family.
No. Absolutely. I mean, the recent sad fatalities recently down the country, it really does break your heart when you see it. And I've been to many crashes and fatalities over the years. And it's the saddest thing to go to a fatality and happen to go to a house and inform their loved ones of the death of our nearest and dearest. And that's not the easiest thing to ever have to do or ever want to do. But the reality is out there, we've had the very high a number of crashes in the 70s and 80s, where at one stage we're up to nearly 600-700 fatalities a year. Now that was reduced quite substantially with better enforcement, better awareness, better communication, all of those things that need to be enhanced. But I don't think just reducing that, there has to be a community engagement, a community awareness.
But you believe it should, Christian, to rush you along, and it's my fault, but you believe we should be reviewing the speed limits in 10 seconds?
I think we should review the speed limits, but there are areas here in Donegal, as you were alluded to, where they have 80 kilometres and roads that there should be only 50 kilometres. They've been there for a number of years. Yeah, I think there is a review, but that review can't be on its own, standing on its own. There has to be a further engagement, community engagement, etc.
Christy Galligan, thank you very much indeed for your time.